Okay, Rabbosai, today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Beis, and we're on the last two words of Nun Aleph Amud Beis, which is the Rabbi Yishmael. So yesterday, we went through the very straightforward sheet of Rabbi Yishmael, who said, look, it's obvious that it's just, you don't need any kind of fancy Gzeres Shavas and Kabbalah. It's a straightforward mamatzinu. The Torah started off with a simple statement that made a set of all ish asher yinafet eshet reyehu. No difference between Arusa, Nesua, Kohenet, Yisraelit. Fine. Then when we find that there's one clear-cut change, that we take it out of that set and we say, well, this doesn't belong in that set. And that was, of course, the case of Rebat Yisrael, which was only of a Nara Mu'urasa. So even though the case of the Kahuna doesn't say anything about Nara Mu'urasa, it doesn't even say that she's married. But nonetheless, we're able to learn out from there, says Rabbi Yishmael, that where there is something that is a Yotzei min HaKlal, something that was taken out by the Torah from the overall idea of Ishki Yinafet Eshet Reyehu, it's meant to be understood in the same context as the case of the Bas Yisrael, which is the Nara HaMurasa. Therefore, the same thing must be true about the Kohenet. So I don't need any kind of Gzeres Shavah. Of here it says Aviyah, et Aviyahi Mechalelet, and over there it says El Petach Beit Aviyah. None of that's important. Okay, but that means that according to Rabbi Yishmael, as the Gemara now asks, the word Aviyah in the Pasuk of the Bat Kohen, et Aviyahi Mechalelet, has no particular meaning. I mean, like, what's the point? Ah, the point, according to him, is actually a very powerful point, and it makes a nafgamina lahalocha in how it is that we act on a daily basis towards other people who are failing with their children. And that is that miboyle lekidatanya. Now, it's interesting, there's mamash a tshuva by Ramesha Feinstein about this, because I'll tell you in a moment. But according to this shita, Rabbi Yishmael understands that et aviyahi mechalelet, the chiddush is that et aviyahi mechalelet. In other words, Omer Rabbi Meir, this teaches, Haya Rabbi Meir, amen. Ma Talmud lomar et aviyah mechalelet, im hayu noagim bo kodesh, noagim bo chol. Let's say that her father used to be the one who was chosen to be the first to get the Birkat HaMazon, or the first to be called up to speak at an event, and so on. So we're always giving him the Kedusha of the Kahuna, which is to be marked in him. After his daughter acts in this fashion, we no longer do that. And im hayu noagim bo kavod, then noagim bo bizayon. If they used to give him any type of honor, now we treat him with the opposite. We treat him contemptuously. And you're allowed to say, arur shezo yalad, arur shezo gidel, arur sheyatzazu michalatzav. The Marshal says, this is a reference to three different people that you're talking about. One is the mother, Yalad. One is the nanny, whoever was in charge of raising the child in the school. And Roshi Atzazu Michalatzav is a reference to the father. But in any event, you see that you are, because of this, allowed to have it reflect on the person that didn't do anything wrong himself, but whose child acted in this fashion. Omer Ravashi, and that explains, says Ravashi, Kaman Karinan, Rishia Bar Rishia, Afilo the Rishia Bar Tzadika. How is it that we allow people to get away? There's people that hold that you're allowed to call someone, you Russia, the son of a Russia, even though his father was a big tzaddik. That is Kaman Kiaitana. That's going according to the sheet of Rabbi Meir, that you're allowed to have a child's behavior reflect back on the father. And actually, it's interesting. There are more Paskins that it's this way in terms of suing someone for, usually you can sue someone who calls you a Russia. So it's very nogea la halacha. However, as Ramesha Feinstein points out, that in these times, and that's not these times, that are his times, which he thought were these times, little did he even suspect But anyway, in these times, as he says, in which parental influence is now completely meaningless, and social influence and educational influence is much more powerful, then of course it's usser because it doesn't reflect on the parent. You can do your absolute best, and nonetheless, you have been disempowered by society. Okay, last words are the question of why are we saying this? So mitzvata niskalim. Well, we're not talking about the mitzvata niskalim. We just started this whole new issue, and you're saying this is the mitzvah niskalim, referring to what? This is like a whole new parak. No, this is a reference, says the Gemara, back to the previous parak. My tana diktani so mitzvata niskalim. What do we mean? Didn't say anything in this Mishnah, did it? It said the Arba Misas Nimsur Lebesdin. That's the name of our parak. And then it says, and this is the mitzvah of the Niskalim, without having said anything about it. Now, obviously, it's a reference back to the previous parak. The previous parak was taking us through the judicial procedure. Now, in order to get us through the entire beginning of the din, all the way through the actual kiyum of the din, it took a case of niskalim as the example for judicial procedures before even introducing the arba misas. So now what it's saying is, now let's understand that that transition at the end is a perfect segue into our Mishnah. Because essentially what we did before about judicial procedures is a complete description of the various dinim that are nogea, the first of the arba misas listed in the Mishnah. So I want you to understand. Take what we said before, put it in over here again, review it. That's the mitzvah on his calling. Now we can move on. So mishum datana nigmar adin motzino to lesoklo. So because of the fact that we had completed the picture of how it is that we do the entire procedure, it says over there, betaskilag, gavoshte komot, and so on. So because of that, since we're about to introduce now only the second out of the four, and we're skipping over skila, so adi de kaboyla misa mitzvata nisrafim. So we say, okay, now let's go through the four misas pesden. Haniskalim. Okay, you already learned that. Zu mitzvata niskalim. And now let's talk about the mitzvata nisrafim. And indeed, as our intrepid Capitan will tell us, that's what we're exactly about to do.
Burn, baby, burn. Zok de helika Mishnah.
I must tell you that there was a big headline once that took off. I forgot what paper it was in, but it was Learn, Baby, Learn. Not burn, baby, burn. Maybe Barnea remembers where it was. All right. So here is the Mishnah, Mitzvah Tanisrafim. All right. So here's what we do in order to be Mekayim the Mitzvah of Sreifa. First of all, Ayum Meshakinoto Bezevel Adar Kuvutov. So this, the Mefarshim explain. I mean, there's a practical need to make sure that this person is not going to be able to move around and get himself hurt, much worse. But the way that they made him immovable was by putting him into a pile of, let's say it nicely, dung, but that is to treat him like what he is. So the same way that they point out, this is what we do to the sota, that the Torah says to be mavaza, her. So in the actual misa itself, there we try to make certain that v'ahavtal reacha kamocha is mekuyim in terms of which misa we choose and how it would be done. But when it comes to the other elements, that's similar to the process of calling up the sota. So first, we put him, sink him in a pile of dung. V'notnim sudar kasher v'toch haraka. We take a very tough piece of material, but we coat it with something that's softer so it doesn't hurt his skin. V'korecha tzavaro. We put this long scarf around his neck, and we have two people, one pulling in one direction, one pulling in the other direction, which forces him to open his mouth. Someone else, meanwhile, has lit the petila. And we'll see actually the Ramai explains that what is the meaning of a petila, because what we're really talking about over here is lead. But what they would do is they would form these thin thread-like, so that's almost like a wick made out of lead, because that way it's certainly a lot easier to melt lead like that than it would be to take an actual large piece of lead and have to heat it to the point where it melts. So they would turn it into essentially a petilas. Even though we don't light it, it doesn't burn, but it uses the same language that you would have used for a petila. So we say madlikat petila, but that actually means that we have molten lead, which is, once his mouth is forced open, we pour this molten lead into his mouth, and it immediately destroys his body from the inside, and that instantly kills him. Rabbi Yehuda Aimer, you can't do that, because what if you're pulling on his neck to get his mouth open, and you actually strangle him? So afu imet biyadam lo yem kaimim bo mitzvah srefa. What if you end up killing him through chenek, and you didn't do the mitzvah of srefa at all? Therefore, if he doesn't want to open his mouth, poteach et piv mitzvat shelo betovato, will force his mouth open with his big tongues or pliers if necessary. Umadlik et haptilav yoret et tov miyam v'chomeret et pnei miyam. Okay. But for some reason, even though the Torah says that Bat Kohen Kitachel is not, that what should you do with her? Ba'esh tisarev. I mean, that sounds like Ba'esh tisarev. It sounds like make a big pyre and put the witch onto the fire. I mean, like, where do we get this business that we're talking about melting lead and doing something that doesn't even affect the body from the outside? Where does that come from? Well, it sure doesn't seem that everybody agrees to it. Omer Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, I can tell you about an actual event of a Bat Kohen Achat, and she actually was Zinta, and the Beis Din put her onto a pyre, surrounded her with branches, and they burned her up. So that must be what it's mean. That, as we'll see later on, was a Beis Din of Tzedukim. And these people, they take the Torah literally. So if it says Beis Din Sarev, it means you're supposed to burn her up on the stake. Okay, so now let's go through the Mishnah step by step. So somebody lights a petila. What is a petila? Omer Masta, what it means is a thin strip of avar. It's a thin strip of lead. But where do we get the idea that it doesn't mean what it seems to say, which is to burn her at the stake? Atya srefa, srefa miyadat korach. We know that even though it says in the Torah that the asher hikrivu hasirufim, so it uses the word sirufim on those who had died in Adas Korach, as we will see, just like over there, it means that they were internally burnt. So it means that their soul, so to speak, their life force was burnt. It doesn't mean that if you looked at their bodies were burnt to a crisp. So it means the same thing too here. The closest that we can come physically to doing something like that, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, takes the neshama, burns it out from the inside, is that we will duplicate that metaphorically by burning the inside of the body and killing, so to speak, by taking the neshama, but leaving the body intact, so that when you look at this person, it does not seem to have been touched. Rabbi Elazar Omer, I say the word srefa v'sruf, it's not from asher hikrivu et asrufim, it's from the word yivku et asrefa asher saraf Hashem. That's a reference to the children Nadav Avihu of Aaron HaKohen. And it says over there the same halacha, that mala alam srefat neshama v'guf kayam, as again, as we'll see. So here, too, it's comparing Be'esh Tisarev to Yivkut Asreifa. So, Mandi Olef Miadat Korach Minola. First of all, you seem to take it for granted that the people that were burned by Korach were not actually burned. They just were burned, so to speak, by taking their neshama. So, boy, was he burned. So he was burned internally, so to speak. Well, take a look what it says. Et machtot ha-chataim ha-ele benafshotam. It says over here that these machatot, which were what they were bringing the ketoret on, that they really were testing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and testing themselves to see if they were the ones who were supposed to be the Kohanim, and they sinned against their own souls, which means they didn't sin against themselves, meaning including their body. They only sinned against their nefesh, which meant that nishmatan nisrefet and the guf kayam. Whereas Rebbe Lazar, why doesn't he agree with this? Why does he look to Srefat Aaron? Because he holds that actually the Srefa by Korach means a literal Srefa. They were playing with fire. And that fire literally came and burnt their bodies. The only reason it says Nafshotam is to say that it's their own Chiev for their Nefesh. It's because of the fact that they went ahead and sold their souls for nefesh. What is nefesh? Nefesh is usually the things that we, vayinafash. What is vayinafash? Why do we use the word nofesh for a nice vacation? That's exactly what happened. They were seduced by Korach through the most ridiculous things. He would take them out for coffee and cake. He would make these beautiful banquets. And they ended up selling their souls in order to be part. I mean, obviously, they didn't realize that, but this is what happens to people. So give them a nice vacation, and they're already on your side. A well-known tactic of lobbyists.
If you make a party, they join your party.
Your party, literally, yeah. That's what we saw from Ahasuerus. That's the Mocha. Yomrish Lakish, Maidech Siv. What does it mean when David HaMelech writes, Bechanfei La'agei Ma'og, Charak Alay Shinemo? So what does that mean? It means that these people that here he's referring to himself as well, but in the Indian of Korach, so because of the Chanifa was all the sucking up to, for what? For making fun, being sarcastic for a piece of cake, ma'og. Choroka lai shinemo, they gnash their teeth at me. That means, in terms of the Medrash, b'shvil chanufa shichnifu l'korach, because of their sucking up to Korach, aliske l'gima, because he would wine and dine them, choroka layem sar shel gehinam shinav. They had the master of hell gnashing his teeth as they fell in. And how does the one who learns it up from B'nai Aharon, how does he know that B'nai Aharon were only burned in this way internally? So when it says Vayomutu, it's describing a regular death. Not that they were burned, not that you could see anything on their body, but it looked as if they had died like anyone else. So the understanding of the Srefa was that it was something internal that wouldn't have been evident. So why doesn't the other Shita learn it from B'nai Aharon? Because he understands exactly the opposite. Whereas Korach was not an actual Srefa, but the case of B'nai Aharon was an actual Srefa. And the reason, how does he understand Vayamutu? He understands Vayamutu is that that's how it started. The Atchil Mu B'Gavoi Ke'en Mita. At first, as we'll see, they were burned on the inside so that they died. But then that Srefa continued expanding, and it expanded until it actually completed burning their entire physical body. The Tanya Abba Yossi ben Tustoy Yomer, the way that it started was that there were these two magical chutim shel esh. So these were Literally, they looked like two laser beams of fire coming out from the Kochiakadash. They split. The two became four. Two of them went into the nostrils of one of the sons of Aaron's nose, and two went into the nostrils of the other son and burnt them internally. But then it continued to consume them.
Is this like electricity, live and neutral? Electricity, live and neutral. The current.
Well, okay. Maybe. Anyway, so that idea is itself a vision of Mita from the beginning. But doesn't it say, Beferish Vatochal Otam? What does Otam mean? Otam always means then and not something else. I mean, so what's the something else? It must mean not their body. I mean, well, we certainly didn't think that it would, the Esh would destroy their father, the Esh would destroy anyone else there. So it must mean only them internally. No, according to him, it means them, but not their clothing. So the big dekuna that they were wearing wasn't affected. Okay, but in any event, whether you learn it out from Kairach or you learn it out from Bnei Aharon, we're talking about a Sreifa that means only Sreifa mibifnim. But why don't we say that the word Sreifa can be learned from the Purim HaNisrafim? It uses the same lashon of Sreifa over there when it says to take out the Purim, Votzi et kol hapar michutz l'machaneh. The Sarafoto. So the lashon of Sreifa is clearly used for burning something up, literally, which is what we do with the Purim. Why not learn the mitzvah of Sreifa, Bat Kohen, Ba'eshti Saref, from the word Sreifa that we find by the Purim HaNisrafim? Just like over there, it means literal Sreifa, Afkan Sreifa Mamash. Maybe it means burning her on the stake as if she were a pot. No. Isn't it more reasonable to compare the case of burning an Adam like Korach, or like the case of Bnei Aharon, to learn it out of Adam and not to learn it out of a par? Because there's four ways that these two things are more similar. First of all, both of them are talking about a person, the Bat Kohen, or the Ben Aharon, or the Adat Korach. Those are people. Plus, they're both cases of somebody having done a chet. So that's not true about the Purim HaNisrafim. It has nothing to do with having done something wrong. So it's a chote. Furthermore, in each one of these cases, the burning was the death, neshama. By the case of burning the Purim HaNisrafim, you're burning something that had been shechted previously in the Beis HaMikdash. Now you're taking out the basar, you're burning it elsewhere. It's a completely different idea. There it's burning, and over here it's killing with burning. I mean, how do you compare the two? So, and besides that, in the case of the Purim HaNisrafim, there's a very clear-cut vulnerability to its status. A Kohen with the wrong machshava can make it pigel, right? I mean, to say that that has some kind of similarity to the cases here about the Bat Kohen, or it's ridiculous. There's no comparison. She's not vulnerable to any of the dinim of korbanos, so it makes much more sense because of these four issues to compare it to Adam. Well, I mean, I could say that there's a reason to compare it more to the Purim HaNisrafim, Adarabba, the Purim HaNisrafim, Havile Lamelach, because, look, they also are more similar in the sense that in both cases, the Purim HaNisrafim and the case of the Bat Kohen, you are doing something that is machshir. In other words, the Torah said, this is what you're to do. In order to bring a carbon properly, that is a par, in this case, one of the Purim HaPnimiyim, you have to be Sorev. In order to deal with a Bat Kohen, you have to be Sorev. These other cases were responses to doing things wrong. They weren't what to do. And not only that, the case of the Purim HaNisrafim and the case of the Bat Kohen are normative. They apply across all generations. The other two cases of the Bnei Aharon and the Korach, that was an event, a one-time event. Each one of those was a one-time event. So why would we be learning from a one-time event how to apply something to a normative din? Says the Gemara, you're right, but four against two always goes to four. So hanach nefishi. Okay, now I'd like to know, according to the Mandi Omar, who learns it out from Adas Korach, I mean, why wouldn't he learn it from Bnei Aharon? Well, I told you, because he said Bnei Aharon was a real, total case of Sreifa. Fine, that's exactly what I'm asking. So learn from Bnei Aharon that Sreifa means Sreifa. Why in the world, if you've got two possibilities, you've got, maybe I could compare it to Bnei Korach and say that we didn't burn the actual body. Or maybe I could compare it to the Bnei Aharon and say we do. So, I mean, why not just take the pasuk, kipshuta, it says burn her at the stake, the same way the Bnei Aharon. Who told you to learn it from Bnei Korach? Wow. This is our standard response. Omer Nachman, Omer Rabba Baravua, after all, the Torah tells us, v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, as we've seen before. If you have to kill someone, do it in the nicest possible way. How would you want to be killed? I don't want to be killed, but what if you needed to be killed? How would you want to be killed? So why doesn't v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha apply to there as well? It's amazing. There's no contradiction between the need to be mekayim the din of Besdin and the underlying love of Ahavta L'Recha Kamoch. I understand. So then if that's true, and you're saying that that's a halachic principle that's going to allow you to define what type of death to choose, why do I need all of this business? Comparing it to Bnei Korach or comparing it to Bnei Aharon, just bring the halacha. The Torah says Ahavta L'Recha Kamoch, and therefore when it says to burn the Bat Kohen, it must mean not to burn her in this vicious way of tying her to the stake. After all, what type of a hafta l'recha kamocha is that? So then I don't need any of that. V'chimiachad ikar Reb Nachman, why do I need the gzeira shava? Obviously, I need the gzeira shava. Because first, I need to know that there's an option. I mean, if I wouldn't have had a way to justify defining the word burning as meaning this type of internal burning without defacing her and so on, I wouldn't be able to say, just because I would like to be a little bit more civilized than burning someone at the stake, I don't have the right to say that that's what it means. I have to first know that there is a possibility that this could be called Sreifa. Once I know it could be called Sreifa, then I apply what it was Rabbi Nachman said. Which Sreifa are you going to choose? Obviously, you'll choose the one that is more expressive of Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. That's the point. So you love Gzeirah Shava. If I didn't have this basic comparison to the case of the either Bnei Aharon or to Korach, I would have said maybe Sreifat Neshama V'Guf Kayam is Bichlal not considered to be Sreifa. Who's to say that's Sreifa? But you'll say it says Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. As it applies to Sreifa, would mean instead of having a low fire flame, make sure it's really, really hot so that she's burned up quickly. Okay, I mean, that's also lapish lechavileis murais, add a lot of very inflammable things to lisraf la'agel so that she should be burned up as quickly as possible. Now that I have the Gzeirah Shava, and now that I know that there's an option of understanding Sreifa as Guf Kayam, now I take, okay, obviously if it's an option, that's the option to take. Once we're talking about the Bnei Aharon, so, you know, you have to see this whole thing in context. Actually, as it says in the Medrash, on their way up, this is unbelievable, according to the Medrash, and Gemara maybe doesn't want to bring this out, but on their way up to Har Sinai, so everybody's going to their station, right? So each one has a special mokum. The more chosh of you were, the closer you got to Har Sinai. And Aaron and Moshe were going to their welcome. Obviously, Moshe was going to go all the way up, and Nadav Avihu are walking behind them, and everybody else is behind Nadav Avihu. They were the most chashev that went before Kol Yisrael. So Nadav says to Avihu, "Look at these two old guys, Moshe and Aaron. They're basically beyond their peak. We need a little bit of young life over here to get this nation into shape. These guys aren't going to be able to do anything. How long do you think it's going to take for these guys to die so that we end up in charge? We've got the better idea, and therefore we should be the ones in charge." So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to them, so to speak, "Okay, let's see who buries whom." Omer of Papa, that is what people, Sefer Papa always remember, brings out the way people, the common adag. Hainu da amri inche, nefishe gamle sabi, teteine mashke da hugne. You know, there's a lot of old camels over there that are loaded down with skins of young camels who have died. That's what people mean. Always the young people making fun of the old people, but you never know who's going first. Anyway, getting to the idea of the Kairach, so you need to know that the entire 250 ish of Bnei that were together with Adas Kairach were Talmidei Chachamim, and they were all very chashev and in place. They were basically the ones that were the head of their shevet, and somehow or other, Korach was able to influence them because of the fact that, you know, they accepted these vacations, free flights, beautiful parties, and that's enough to destroy them. From there you see, Omer Rabbi Elazar, Lemata mit chacham domeh lifnei ha'aretz. So take a look at the way that a Talmud Chacham appears to an Am Haaretz before they are able to make him close to them. So Betchila, first way they look at him is, wow, he's domeh lekiton shel zahav. He's like a beautiful golden container. And why do we call him a container? Because he's full of Torah. And the Ben Ishchai points out, kiton is actually the otiot of tikun. Right? So he carries with him the whole Tikkun HaOlam inside of him. Wow. People have tremendous respect for that. Okay, keep your distance. Because let me tell you, Siper Himeno, the first time you have a conversation with him about the silly things that he wants to talk about, he's going to tell you over a joke. He'll talk to you about politics, and you'll do him the courtesy of listening to him. Now, you're no longer a Kitan Shel Zahav. Now you're a Kitan Shel Kesef. You know, Kesef gets tarnished very easily. Now he buys you a cup of coffee. You sit down. Me'anemi menu? You allowed him to buy you a cup of coffee? Domele Kitan Shel Cheres. Now you're an earthenware container that once it breaks, you can't put it back together again. Kivan Sheshiber. Shuv Enlo Takana, all the king's horses and all the king's men will never put poor Humpty Dumpty together again. So all you need to do is to accept a little bit of that. You know, you're like everybody else. You can be bought for a cup of coffee. Don't talk idly and don't accept anything. Anyway, moving on to the story of the Mishnah, where we had actually somebody by Tzedukim, as it turns out, we'll see, was actually burned at the stake. So there was this story of Imrata Bat Talia, and she was a Bat Kohen, and she was found to be committing adultery, and Rav Chama Bar Tuvia burned her at the stake. Akva Rav Chama Bar Tuvia Chavilei Zmurais V'Sorafa. Omer of Yosef, well, this is a big mistake. Tobetarte. First of all, he was Tobet Rav Masna. He didn't understand what we said over here, as Rav Masna explained, that it's Dafka lead, and we use these ptilot, and he thought that you're supposed to burn her at the stake. And furthermore, he thought that Bizman Hazeh, you can burn someone. Tohobidatanya. That means if there is a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash who is doing Avodah, Bizman Sheyesh Kohen, that's when there is a Mishpat of these Dinim of Nefoshes. But Bizman Sheyin Kohen, Ein Mishpat. Now, obviously, it's ridiculous, as many, many of the Achronim point out, to say that Rav Chama Bar Tuvia managed to get together a Sanhedrin of Esrin Veshleisha, who are smuchim, who all made this insane mistake that any child knows is ridiculous. And so it's clear that Rav Chama Bar Tuvia only did this as obviously a act of tikkun olam, in which he felt it was necessary. And it was an eis la Hashem, so it was a hora'at sha'ah. So what in the world is Rabbi Yosef coming along and saying he made a mistake? So there's a number of different explanations to this. One is very interesting, and I mentioned this to you when we learned our Mishnah originally, arba mitot nimsru lebeitin, that according to some of the Achronim, what this means is that there were only four mitot that were given to Beit Din to be able to use under any and all circumstances. What about the fact that it says that if a guy is running away, you can shoot him? That was said only in terms of a rotseach. Murderers can be taken out. But otherwise, you're stuck with always one of the arba mitot Beit Din. Okay, personally, I don't believe this. And it never shows up in any of the Rishonim. So, okay. But anyway, it is offered as a possibility. But others learn that the mistake that he made was that he followed the example of the Tzedukim by being hyper-literal. The Torah says burner. So yeah, burner means burner at the stake. Obviously, it doesn't mean that. And he knew it didn't mean that. But to even try to make an impression on people by doing things the way that Tzedukim do it, that is a terrible mistake. Furthermore, okay, this business of Batal HaKohanim, that it isn't proper for Beis Din just for something like this to do a Tikkun HaSha'ah. Okay, fine. But in any event, obviously, Reb Chama, although the truth is, we really don't know who Reb Chama Bar Tuvia is, because this is the only place that he's mentioned in all of Shas. So I don't know. But obviously, if he did this, he would have had to do it with the Sanhedrin. And there are other questions that are involved here. I mean, how is it possible that she was Matir Atzma L'Misa? She can always say, I don't know, the Edom are idiots. They said I was going to be killed. I knew I wasn't going to be killed because Beis Din doesn't kill Bizman Hazeh. So there would be no way you could kill her anyway. So the whole thing doesn't make any kind of sense for many reasons. It must be that it was Hora'at Sha'ah. That seems to be clear. Amar Rebbe Elazar b'Tzadik. So now getting back to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah said that I remember that there was a Maisa with a Bat Kohen and they burned her up at the stake. And so in the Mishnah it says, that was because it was a bezin of a bunch of idiots. Omer of Yosef, that was a bezin of tzedukim. And they take the pasuk literally, and they're not mekabel, the Teresh Baal Peh. And so, of course, they became like a bunch of primitives. So that's the story? I remember a braita that says a whole different discussion with exactly Rebbe Lazar and the Chachamim, and they didn't tell him that. They said something else, Rebbe Yosef. You must be mixed up. Tanya, take a look at the Braisa. The Braisa goes like this. Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Tzadok, this is the same story that we have in our Mishnah, same Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Tzadok, and in the Braita, which is usually the more complete story, it says, Zochrani kishahayiti tinog, I remember when I was a kid and my dad was carrying me on his shoulders. I was a really young kid. It was a fun time. And I saw they brought a bat kohen shezinta and they burned her at the stake. Yikifua chafile zmuras v'srafu. And the response of the Chachamim to that was, you were a kid And a kid doesn't know what he saw. So when you're telling us what you saw, since you were a katana at the time, you apparently think that you can report, once you're an adult, what you saw as a katana. But what you don't understand is the way that memory works. And memories of a katana are completely and totally unreliable, even though you're convinced that this is what you remember, and you remember every last detail. Every last detail is made up by your brain. There's a wonderful article, beautiful essay by Stephen Gould about this, about his own memories. He was convinced, this was like one of the biggest memories of his childhood, about how he used to sit on the front stairs and at this particular house, and they would hear the games of the Yankees that were being played. They could hear the bat that went about. Yeah, a home run was made and everything. All right, so he went back there. It was nowhere near Yankee Stadium. It was absolutely impossible for anyone to hear anything from Yankee Stadium at there. And the whole experience had been made up literally from nothing in his mind, because this was something that he had wanted to experience. This is another beautiful story also by Oliver Sacks. Exactly the same thing. He remembers exactly what it was like when the bomb had landed, like near their house in London during the war, before he was taken away to outside of London, where they took the kids to stay during the war. And he found out afterwards he wasn't in London for that at all. There was no way that he could have experienced that. So he had heard a story from his brother, had translated it in his mind to something that had happened to him, and was convinced his entire adult life that this was something that had actually happened to him. So this idea of the Gemara is so firmly based, and as the Rambam says, the idea of relying on people's memories at all is a complete ridiculous thing. No real testimony is reliable. It's just that it's a gzirat hakatuv. The Torah said, look, you have to proceed legally on the basis of something. So if two people report it and they match all of these norms, they're not ketanim and so on, so okay, you have no choice but to accept their testimony. But it's certainly not because we actually believe that what people think they remember is what they actually had.
Isn't this relative to Atkan Tchum Shabbos? Do we rely on the child or not? That would be the same issue.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously different than relying on a din of how to proceed by killing someone. But yeah. Anyway, so what's the story? What's the real story? Was the story the brightest story, that they told him you were just a kid? Or was the story the Mishnah story? They told him, yes, it's true, the event happened, but it was a bezdin of tzedukim. Which one was true? What do you mean, which one was true? Why can't they be two different stories? There were two different stories. He once had a maaseh like this as a child on his father's back, and he once, as an adult, had seen this other story with this crazy bezdin of tzedukim. Okay, well, which one was the first story? Hi, Omar Lubaresh. I mean, if he said the one in the Mishnah first, Ilam HaKamaisa, when we learned first, and he said that, so if he told him something that had actually happened, and they dismissed it by telling him that that was not a serious bezdin, so why would he then tell them over, I remember as a kid, I mean, over there, obviously they're not going to listen to him. So why would he have said the other story? What must have been is that the story in the Braita happened first. So they said to him, you were just a kid, and therefore what you say probably never happened. So there they told him, Omrle Katana Yita. So then he told him, but there was another story that I also witnessed as a gadol. And at that they told him, okay, if you witnessed that, it's because it was a bezdin of tzedukim. Which brings us to our next exciting episode.
So the Halakha Mishnah.
Rachid, sounds to me like you need a drink. I think Barnea should be focusing on you.
Yeah, probably right.
Mitzvat haneheragin. Okay, so now we're going down from, we did skila, we did sreifa, and now, according to the Rabbanan, the next in line is saif, which we call herek. So that, what do we do there? Hayumat izinet rosho besaif, kiderach shamalchut osah. Same way the government does nowadays, they simply take a sword and decapitate. Says Rabbi Yehuda, that is an evil. It's disgusting to do such a thing. Now, at this point, we thought that the element of the evil is the fact that then his body stands for a second headless and falls to the ground. But rather, says Rabbi Yehuda, we'll see in the end, that's not what he meant. But rather, what we do is we use a guillotine. So we use a butcher knife for a guillotine. Amrulo, that's even more disgusting. Amrulo, ein mita menuvelet mizu. What is this, an animal? Now, in the Brice, it explains, Tanya, amalim Rabbi Yudel Chachomim, you think that I don't understand that what I said is disgusting. Afaniyodeh shemita menuveleti, but you cannot do what you are saying, which indeed I admit is less menuval, because as you yourself said, kederech shamalchut osa, you're not allowed to act the way that the malchut acts. Doesn't it say bechukotehem lo telechu? So if you're going to follow the way that the goyim do things, that is disgusting. That's what I mean by saying it's menuval. Why are we doing the same type of thing that they do? Whereas the Rabbanan say, we're not following them. The Torah said to use Sayef, and therefore, we're not learning from them. So, kiven dechtiv Sayef bioraita, lo minayu kagamrina. I mean, if you don't believe that, how do you explain the fact, yelo tema hachi, the Braita said, sorfim ala melachim, velo midarkeya emori, that if a king dies, we burn his personal things, because it would be a bizoyan to have other people using the king's shaver and sleeping on the pillow that the king slept. So because of that, it's part of the covet of the melech that no one else shall use their things. And that's not called darkei emori, which is also because of bechukoteim lo telechu. According to you, how do we do such a thing? Doesn't it say bechukoteim lo telechu? So what makes this allowable? Clearly, because we find in Tanakh that there is a sreifa on melachim, given dechtiv sreifa bioraita, dechtiv, look, we find that Tzidkiyahu was told, b'misrafot avotecha, your things will be burned in the same way that your forefathers' things, the kings, were burned. Okay, so it means that the Torah apparently approves this type of behavior. We're not learning it from them. Lav minayu kagamrina, so hachinami, kivan dechtiv saif bioraita, lav minayu kagamrina. So obviously, if this is something that is part of the Torah, it's not considered to be bechukotein. That would exactly be the meaning over here. This, of course, by the way, is a fundamental principle, which there's a lot of machlokas on how precisely it applies, that things that are not really part of the way that some of the Rishonim use the Lashon, it's not a tzorech, or some of them use the Lashon, it's not specifically for the use of Avodah Zorah that it's done, it's just the way they happen to do things. So otherwise you could say, if Goyim dress in a particular way, so you're not allowed to dress the way the Goyim dress, that is certainly not true la'alacha. Anything, the way that the Chazon Ish puts it, anything which is something that is adopted by Jews, by non-Jews, by different cultures, that's something that is not culturally specific, is not an element of anything that has religious meaning. And if you want to wear a boss suit, you don't wear boss suits because in church they wear boss suits. You wear boss suits. I mean, once upon a time, I don't think they're choshev anymore, but you wear a boss suit because it is to you something that's beautiful. It's classy. So you're certainly allowed to wear class. Why would that be? So even other Rishonim that say that that take that a step further. Even things that are used for the church, but they're not in any way relevant to the particular religion. They're just the way that people are and the way that they feel culturally makes sense. Even that, if it doesn't specifically tie into some type of religious belief, even that's not called Bechukotehem lo telechu. That is already machlokas, how far we go on that. So anyway, the question is, as we said, the Sayyaf, now it happens to be that this Sayyaf that we're going to see later on, when the Mishnah continues, it's going to be explaining who are the ones that are affected by each one of these mitot. So the Mishnah over there says, in the next parak, so it says over there, Hadetan bidach birken Elohein aneragin, the ones that we use the Sayyaf on a zerot seyah, so a murderer, and as we saw before, anshei ir hanidachat. So I understand why the Ir HaNidachat is b'sayef. It says b'feresh about an Ir HaNidachat, v'yikita lefi charev, to use the sword. But where does it say that a rotzeach is supposed to be b'sayef? Ah, that the Braita explains. This is learned from the pasuk that has to do with killing your own slave. So it says over there, V'chiyake ish et avdo et amato, o et amato b'shevet, u'meit tachat yado, nakom yinakim. Now that word, nakom yinakim, that servant shall be avenged. Okay, how do you avenge? Well, nekama, I don't know what nekama means, in yodea mahu, but when I realize that it says b'feresh in the posek about the things that will happen, if you don't keep the bris of Hashem, ve'veti alechem cherev nokemet mekam brit. Oh, so here it says that it's the sword that is vengeance. Okay, so you see that this word nikima is a reference to sayef. Okay, sayef I understand, but the way the sword kills, I mean, you could stab someone. Who's to say he's supposed to be beheaded? Maybe stab him in the chest. No, it says lefi charev. Lefi charev means by the edge. When you're stabbing, you don't use the edge of the sword. You use the point of the sword. Well, that's the whole point. So obviously, we're meant to be discussing decapitation. Kama David legistra. Who's to say that it means decapitation? Maybe it means slice him into two parts, you know, cut him straight down into two pieces. Ah, says the Gemara, come on, man. Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rabba Baravu, Omer Kra, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, b'ror lo mita yafa. That is ridiculous. If you are supposed to be choosing, and certainly Lefi Chorev could mean decapitation, try to be as nice as you can. Okay, but this is only nekama for killing your slave. But how about for killing a free man, bar chori min olam? Well, I mean, isn't it a kal vachomer? What are you going to say? That if you kill your slave, you're chayev sayef. But if you kill a ben chorin, you're not chayev sayef. You can get away with chenek. Remember, we're going over here, going to Rabbanan, who hold that chenek is kalmi sayef. So therefore, obviously, it can't mean that it's going to be more chomer. Okay, but that's only true if chenek actually is less than Sayyaf. But what about according to Rabbi Shimon? Leman de'amar chenek chamur. How are you going to learn it there? That's true. But there is another pasuk, and the Braita brings that up. Mikidatanya. It says by the Egla Arufa, where we actually take this Egel and we behead it. It says, Vatate va'er adam anaki mikirbech. So after the whole thing that we do, we don't know who the murderer is, but it says you should make sure to get rid of this innocent blood that has been shed. So that teaches us that then you still have to look for the murderer, and if you find the murderer, then he still needs to be Tiva'er Damanaki. You don't say, well, we already brought Egla Rufa, so the murderer doesn't have to be killed. Not true. Go after the murderer. Now, that means that Ukshu Kosher Chedonim Le'egla Rufa. What we're talking about, a murderer, is compared to the Egla Arufa itself. Just like the way that we kill the Egla Arufa is with a sword, and some take out with a sword because it isn't with a sword, it's with a kofitz, as the Gemara explains elsewhere. So, but it means with a sword-like cutting. Minat Savar. So here, by the Nogia, the din of a rotzeach, what also mean? Besayef uminat zavar. Now you'll ask, why don't we compare it totally? Imala halan bekofitz umimul oref. Over there, we use a butcher knife, an axe, and it's from the back of the neck. So maybe that's what we should do over here as well. Ah, that says Reb Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua, you know the answer to that. Omar Kro, the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, that means Brorlo Mita Yafa. So we would not want to do something like that.